I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Ton, the next texter wants to know if there's a variety of jacaranda tree that would grow here in the Salt Lake area.
No.
You pulled it up for me. It's a beautiful tree.
It is. They're a tropical and near tropical tree. So if the listeners are familiar with USDA cold hardiness zones, Zone 1 is Arctic, and Zone 11 is tropical. Mm-hmm. And so on this scale, we fit in at about a Zone 6 or 7 along the Wasatch Front in the middle, but jacaranda trees is Zone 10 or 11, so near tropical to tropical. So as far as geography, cities you would look at would be Orlando South, mm-hmm. and then also San Diego and maybe Los Angeles. But those would be the areas that the jacaranda thrives. Phoenix, maybe, but not here. And there's not a species or a cultivar that will survive northern Utah.
All right. Next listener is in Pleasant Grove. They need help with a cedar tree. It's a weeping cedar, about 12 foot tall, but the foliage is scant on some of the branches, and it looks yellow in some areas. Lower branches seem to have fuller foliage. They'd like to save it. Any suggestions?
Get some pictures on our Facebook Messenger. That in this situation, a picture's worth a thousand years. It sounds like it may be some water issues, mm-hmm. but let's upload some pictures to our Facebook page and our Facebook Messenger for the KSL Greenhouse and take a look.
All right. Grace is on the line in Salt Lake. Good morning, Grace. What is your question this morning?
Good morning. Hold on. I'm going to turn off the speaker.
Great.
Okay. I have two questions. First one is it too early to take out iris so that I can give them to someone else because they're tripled in number?
Well, the time to divide those iris is generally sometime in mid-August to early September.
Oh.
And so if you could wait another couple of months, I think that it's not that you wouldn't have success, but if you do it then, you maximize the chances of getting flowers sooner.
Oh, okay. All right, that's one. Two, I inherited these horrible yuccas, and there used to be two, now they're five, and they stab you. How do I dig them out? Can I cut the leaves off? Will that kill them if I don't get the root out?
No,
what do I do?
Even if you dig them, they will keep coming because any root piece left in there will form a new plant. And so it's going to be a few years of cat and mouse or whack-a-mole, however Whoa. You want to put it. But it would be, if you did cut them back with some leather gloves and some shears, it would be easier to dig them. But I think that you're going to be fighting it for a few years.
Okay, but I could do it now if I...
Oh, yeah. If you're just wanting to take them out, that's fine.
Yeah. All right. Thank
All
you
right,
very
Grace,
much.
Thanks so much for your question this morning, your call. The next question on our text page is confusing me a little bit because they're talking about alyssum, and I don't think of alyssum as being plate-sized. The texter says they have some alyssum that's plate-sized and beautiful, but some is baseball-sized and not flowering. Is there a bug that could be destroying the blossom?
I wonder if they're talking about perennial alyssum or the yellow alyssum, the perennial type.
Is it plate-sized?
I wonder if the plant is that wide itself.
Oh, okay.
The foliage.
Okay.
I don't know of any bugs that will get to it. The common name for that is basket of gold. But another name that you often see it is perennial alyssum.
Mm-hmm.
And it's related to the sweet alyssums that are annual. So I'm assuming that's what they're talking about. And I don't know of any bugs that get into it. They get a little bit tired and scraggly looking in July and August, September. but I don't know of anything that goes after them.
Right. Anything that attacks regular alyssum?
No, they're pretty pest-free. I usually, when you see things like that, it's a water problem, whether too much or too little. But, you know, and there could be some root diseases like verticillium or phytophthora. I don't really have enough to go on, but alyssums, whether it's sweet alyssum or basket of gold, are fairly disease resistant.
Okay. Next listener says they have mixed a lot of wood shavings into the soil where they put their tomatoes. And now they have a lot of mushrooms coming up around the tomato plants. Will the mushrooms hurt them?
No, they won't hurt them. I might put down, if they already have, a little bit of lawn fertilizer nitrogen to offset the soil breaking down the wood, because wood's really hard for soil microorganisms to break down. It takes a while, but if you put too much in, my soil microorganisms utilize all the nitrogen in the soil, and they can get at it and compete for it more efficiently than the plants. And so oftentimes if you do that, you need to do an application of nitrogen fertilizer to offset the wood chips in the soil.
Okay. Phil is on the line in Saratoga Springs. Good morning, Phil. What is your question?
Well, I have a zucchini squash plant that's got little gray spots around where the veins come together. You can't rub it off. The plant's growing well, but I want to know what I should do for it.
Nothing. It's totally normal.
Are,
over the last 10 or 15 years, there's been more of them introduced, but there are strains of yellow squash and zucchini that has that silvering along the veins, and it's just completely normal.
Super. Good news. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for your call this morning. Let's take another call. This is Bonnie in Sandy. Good morning, Bonnie. How can we help you?
Good morning. Last year, I planted a butterfly garden, and it's in full sun, and I've got liatris in it, and I called last fall and you guys told me not to try, you know, dig them up or anything like that, and they've done fine, but now I've got, where I had one liatris, I've got five, and I'm wondering, how do I thin those out? Should I thin them out, or what do I do?
Not at this point. I would wait until they die back for the fall and then dig them then. If you try now, you may kill them.
What will I find when I dig them up? Will I find one big ball that has to be broken up?
If you do, you just use a shovel to cut them or a sharp knife.
Okay.
But you can dig the whole clump if you want and cut it into sections and replant them.
Okay, and we replant them in the fall.
You want to immediately replant them once they're divided.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says they have some cherry laurel bushes under a window that's they've outgrown the space. Will it hurt them to give them a slight trim now?
No, it will be fine. What I would do next spring is go in toward the base of the shrub and just follow the branches and take out 25 to 30% of them toward the base and just find the biggest branches. Then after they do that, they can give it a haircut. And this would be mid to late March, and that would keep the size down, but still keep it really bushy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a one-time haircut isn't going to hurt them, but over the years, if you keep doing that, it will thin the bush out, but one time's not going to cause any harm.
Okay, so spring is normally the best time.
It is, and they would use renewal pruning instead of just shearing.
Okay, and then they said that sometimes the leaves randomly just get brown, no consistent time. Is that normal?
It can be. The cherry laurels are actually very closely related to peaches and cherries.
Mm-hmm.
They're evergreen bushes, but they're in the same family, and they get the same diseases. And so if they were getting Carinium or there's others, I could see that there would be random leaf drop. But if 99% of the shrub is healthy or, you know, whatever it is, then I wouldn't worry that much.
All right. We're going to take a break. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you for joining us for this final segment of the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Anton with you, taking your calls. Let's go back to our phone lines. And Doug is on the line in Salt Lake. Good morning, Doug. What is your question?
I've got a question. Above Fairview at 8,000 feet, I'm wondering if there's anything that would grow in that season, fruit trees, blackberries, et cetera, anything you could suggest?
Summer apples would be something you could look at. So Lodi, yellow transparent, sweet 16. So summer apples might be a possibility. The strawberries, if you can cover them for the winter or make sure they get snow cover, which you can't really do, but they need to be covered. Then there's some varieties of raspberries that are extremely cold hardy. Currant or gooseberries would be others you could do also. And then some species of American plums. You'd have to order them online, but there are American bush plums that would be perfectly happy also.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks for your call this morning. Our next listener says, is there a good height for a fruit tree to keep it productive and manageable to harvest the produce?
Well, I like to keep my fruit trees to about 8 to 10 feet because I don't like climbing that high, but you need to find fruit trees with at least semi-dwarfing rootstock.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you get a regular rootstock on there that allows a fruit tree to normally grow to 35 or 40 feet, not really going to be that possible or practical to do. But yes, there is. You just have to stay on top of it and make sure that when you purchase, you're most likely going to want to purchase from garden centers because that's where you're likely to find the semi-dwarfing rootstocks.
All right, back to the phone lines. Kelvin is in Cottonwood Heights. Good morning, Kelvin.
Good morning.
What is your question?
The question is, we have some healthy squash plants, but all of a sudden we're getting a myriad of bugs, squash bugs. What do we do about that?
Well, if you don't want to use a chemical, pick them all off and put them in a bucket of soapy water so they drowned. And there's really, I mean, if you wanted to try a spray, something like permethrin would be something you could do once or twice, but you can flare the insects, the other bad insects, and kill beneficials. But really, I mean, the solution, if you only have three or four plants and the plants aren't too big, get a gallon of soapy water, pour it around over the top of the plant, and just pick them all off, learn what the eggs look like, and get those off the leaves. Because if you let those squash bugs go, your squash will be dead.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Good luck to you on that. Ton, next listener wants to know, is it too late for carrots?
Yeah, it is. Probably a little late to get the carrots in.
All right. Colleen is on the line from Taylorsville. Good morning, Colleen. What is your question?
Good morning. Our neighbors had a sumac tree, and they took it out when putting in a fence, but we still have the roots in our lawn. And they're sprouting up new trees. How do we get rid of it?
Every time you see a sprout come up, you're going to want to get a bottle of concentrated weed killer, preferably something like glyphosate, and just dip a paintbrush, just like a watercolor paintbrush, into there and clip, and then immediately paint that stump or little stub with just a little bit of that glyphosate. And you keep doing that, and over the season it should kill it. You may take a couple of years.
Okay, glyphosate.
Yeah, that's Roundup or kills all.
Okay, all right. But it's in our lawn. Will it kill our lawn also?
If you don't drip it on the lawn, it won't kill your lawn.
Hmm. Okay, sounds good. Thank you. What if we have dug down and found the root and chopped into it. Can I put Roundup on it?
You'd have to have a fresh cut, but you could.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, Colleen. Thanks so much for your question. Anton, we do have another person asking about getting morning glory out of their lawn. What's the best way to do that? And we do have a video up on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. It's in the video section if you want to check that out as well.
Yes. I would wait for fall and either use like a product like Q4 Plus or Image all-in-one weed killer. The Image you may be able to spray now as long as it's below 90 and be okay. But the fall is the best time to do it because the poisons get into the roots and sit all winter long, and you just get a lot more effective kill.
Nice. Our next listener says they have a rose of Sharon that has not leafed out. Is it dead, or what should they be doing with
it? If it hasn't leafed out by now, it's most likely dead.
Definitely dead, right? So I would say dig it up and start again, right?
Yes.
Next person has a question about a maple tree that they want to plant in their front yard. Oh, they say they did plant it in their front yard, and it just died. What? I know that's a tough one for you. You need more information on that, Ton. Any idea what could be happening
with
that?
If it died in the first year, it's almost always overwatering.
How do you know if you're overwatering?
It's usually when the tree dies that you find out, but
it's not helpful, Ton.
When you first put a tree in a normal Utah soil, it should probably be watered 3 times a week for 6 or 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then you can start tapering back a little bit, but we have a tendency to love them too much and love them to death. And so we say, oh, it's wilted a bit. I'm going to put more water on there. And about 70% of the time I see a plant dead in its first year, it's overwatering, and the other 30% is underwatering.
So when we do see that it's wilted, we actually should be checking the soil first before
Correct.
We're putting more water on
because
it.
Because overwatering, symptoms from overwatering look exactly the same as drought stress because you rot the roots off. And the roots can't take up enough water, and so the leaves start to wilt. You put more water on there, and it makes the problem worse.
So for this person who may not understand how to check the soil, because it's not as easy as just putting your finger in the soil.
No,
tell them how to do that.
No, you need to get a little hand shovel and dig along the side, or get a shovel out if it's a larger tree, and dig down toward the bottom of the root ball. So you'd water it in, wait a couple of days, dig down and see how moist the soil is, if it's dry water. Mm-hmm. But during the hot time of year, during the summer, you can do this a couple times and figure out a schedule that you need to water for, say, 3 or 4 or 5 minutes with a hose every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and get a schedule down. But until you do some digging and investigation, you don't know for sure.
Next listener would like to know, how do you kill clover in your flower beds and grass?
They may have black medic, so they want to look that up, but in your flower beds, it's very difficult because it'll also kill your flowers, whatever you would spray. And so hand digging or maybe very careful application of glyphosate would be something they could look at, but I think hand digging may be the safest. In the lawn, they could just use a good lawn weed killer in the fall with triclopyr in it, and that would help.
So what would be the difference in treatment if it was clover versus black medic?
Black medic seeds profusely Ugh. And spreads more quickly.
Ugh.
And if you have a lot of clover in your lawn, it's also a sign that the lawn is nitrogen starved, and it outcompetes the lawn because of that.
So is black medic the one with the little yellow flowers?
It is. It looks like clover, but it has yellow flowers.
And it's really tough to get rid of.
It is. It's an annual, biennial, or short-lived perennial, and it seeds like crazy. But it only invades areas of the lawn where the lawn needs to be thickened up.
I think I have it in areas of my lawn where it moved out of my flower bed and into my lawn.
Yeah, and it very well can do that. And so in these situations, like the Image all-in-one weed killer might be one that you could look at.
Okay, next person wants to know, how do they kill various types of ivy in the garden?
Clip
I could
it.
Have asked this question because
yeah.
I have this problem right now.
Clip it and dab concentrated Roundup or lawn weed killer on the stump that you've just clipped. Keep it up, and over a season you should be able to knock it out.
So my question for you would be, if I have a large, remember that pine tree that had to come down? Well, all under it was this huge area of ivy. So I'm not going to be able to clip each piece and do what you said. What would be your suggestion for me?
Either Speed Zone. Well, it's too hot for yeah. a lot of the lawn weed killers, but mm-hmm. maybe a glyphosate product with a spreader sticker in it that is going to, the ivy leaves are very waxy.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need something to penetrate through. And so regular applications of a glyphosate product mixed with a spreader sticker or surfactant and just repeatedly sprayed would be the way I'd go about it.
Can I just till it up?
No, because it'll just come back.
Okay. I didn't want to hear that. All right. And that's it for us and the KSL Greenhouse Show. Hope you'll join us again next week from 8 to 11. And you can find more of our topics on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. Have a great weekend.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.